There's no more famous Scottish poet than our national bard Robert Burns, and nothing more famous than the poem commonly known as Tam O'Shanter that he wrote, actually known as Tam O'Shanter, A Tale. It was written in 1790. The book was written by David Deitches and illustrated by Derek Robertson in 1990 on Tam O'Shanter, A Tale, and long after my father died and when my mother moved from their last house and we cleared out some books, I found a limited edition copy numbered 1175 of 2,000 copies which were made of this book, Tam O'Shanter, A Tale, and it's really a treatise by Deitches and Robertson on the tale, and it's introduced with a long narrative, including a narrative written about Tam O'Shanter by Robert Burns himself. So I'm going to read all of that narrative, and I'm going to explain one or two Scottish words where they crop up. So there'll be one or two asides from me, and also the narrative does contain some pieces of the poem, some extracts from it, and if there's anything there that seems too Scottish, I'll try and explain that. And after this, I'm going to read the whole poem. It's one of the few poems which I've not quite committed to memory, but large sections of it I have in my memory, because I did it at school, and it's one of those poems which absolutely captured my imagination. It's full of fun, it's full of poetic devices, it's excellent poetry, it's an excellent story. So, the beginning of the book here, which I'm holding, Tam O'Shanter, A Tale. It says, Tam O'Shanter, Burns' only sustained narrative poem and one of the finest narrative poems in any language, was written at the request of the antiquary Captain Francis Gross. Gross, who had already published his Antiquities of England and Wales, two volumes, 1789 and 1791, was preparing his Antiquities of Scotland when Burns met him. The two soon became good friends. Burns was attracted to the cheerful-looking grig of an old fat fellow, as he called him in a letter to his friend Mrs. Dunlop. I've never seen a man of more original observation, anecdote and remark, he said in the same letter, and he revelled in Gross's fund of stories. Burns, as his brother Gilbert later reported, asked Gross to include in his book a drawing of Alloway Kirk. A kirk is a church, by the way, as it was his father's burial place and was also the scene of many a good story of witches and apparitions. Gross agreed, provided that the poet would supply a witch story to accompany it. Burns wrote to Gross giving three witch stories, the first two of which he called authentic. The second was the story of Tam O'Shanter. It's certainly genuine folklore. Burns provided a prose version of the story as follows. On a market day in the town of Ayr, a farmer from Carrick, and consequently whose way lay by the very gate of Alloway Kirkyard, that's a churchyard, in order to cross the River Doon at the old bridge, which is about 200 or 300 yards further on than the said gate, had been detained by his business, till by the time he reached Alloway it was the wizard hour between the night and morning. Though he was terrified, with a blaze streaming from the kirk, yet, as it was a well-known fact that to turn back on these occasions is running by far the greatest risk of mischief, he prudently advanced on his road. When he reached the gate of the kirkyard, he was surprised and entertained. Through the ribs and arches of an old Gothic window, which still faces the highway, to see a dance of witches merrily footing it round their old sooty blackguard master, that of course was Satan, who was keeping them all alive with the powers of his bagpipe. The farmer, stopping his horse to observe them a little, could plainly descry the faces of many old women of his acquaintance and neighbourhood. How the gentleman was dressed, tradition does not say, but the ladies were all in their smocks, one of them having, unluckily, to have a smock which was considerably too short to answer all the purpose of that piece of dress. Our farmer was so tickled that he involuntarily burst out with a loud laugh. "Wheel Luffin Maggie with a short sark." A sark's a shirt. And recollecting himself, instantly spurred his horse to the top of his speed. I need not mention the universally known fact that no diabolical power can pursue you beyond the middle of a running stream. Lucky it was for the poor farmer that the River Doon was so near, for notwithstanding the speed of his horse, which was a good one, against he reached the middle of the arch of the bridge, and consequently the middle of the stream, the pursuing vengeful hags were so close at his heels that one of them actually sprung to seize him. But it was too late. Nothing was on her side of the stream but the horse's tail, which immediately gave way to her infernal grip, as if blasted by a stroke of lightning. But the farmer was beyond her reach. However, the unsightly, tailless condition of the vigorous steed was to the last hour of the noble creature's life an awful warning to the Carrick farmers not to stay too late in Ayr markets. It was, however, Burns's poetic version that Gross understandably preferred. This first appeared in the Edinburgh Magazine for March 1791, and then in the Edinburgh Herald of March 18th, 1791, before appearing in Volume 2 of Gross's Antiquities of Scotland in April, as an extended footnote to the drawing and account of Alloway Kirk. The poem is prefaced by Gross's comments. This church is also famous for being the place wherein the witches and warlocks used to hold their infernal meetings or sabbaths and prepare their magical unctions. Here too they used to amuse themselves with dancing to the pipes of the Mucklehorn Deal, that's the devil. Diverse stories of these horrid rites are still current, one of which my worthy friend Mr. Burns has here favoured me with in verse. The poem is in octosyllabic couplets, handled with great flexibility, the pace varying with shifts in mood and perspective. The opening four lines set the scene with a quiet objectivity. It is the evening, the day's work is done, people have returned from the market, and druthy neighbours, neighbours meet, druth means thirst, suggests that conviviality is about to take over from work. Suddenly, in the fifth line, the poet is one of the convivial group. The tone has shifted from one of objective description to complicity. While we sit boozing at the nappy, the poet is now speaking from the centre of a story, not describing things as an observer. The sense of the cosiness of the interior contrasted with the harsh realities of wind and weather outside and the equally harsh realities of domestic life is given comic precision by the picture of the waiting wife, nursing her wrath to keep it warm. The poet at this point is one of the boys, and their world of male conviviality is set against the domestic realities they are temporarily trying to forget. Then we are back on the outside again. This truth found honest Tam O'Shanter. It is to be a story about somebody else, narrated by the poet, who is not a participant, yet in a sense he is still a participant, for in that parenthetical compliment to Ayr, called Ayr, when ne'er a town surpasses for honest men and bonny lasses, the poet is showing that he knows this environment from the inside and pays his tribute to it. It is a touch of splendidly human complicity. There is a pause, and the poet's voice changes again. In mock reproach, he addresses Tam in the hectoring tones of his wife, using the lively vulgarity of deliberately chosen Scots words. A blethering, blustering, drunken blellum. The list of Tam's debauches rises relentlessly to its climax, that at the Lord's house even on Sunday thou drank wi' Kirk and Jean till Monday. And then the prophesied doom. She prophesied that late or soon thou would be found deep drowned in Doon, Doon was the river, or catched wi' warlocks in the murk by Alloway's old haunted kirk. Now there is another pause, and the poet emerges again, speaking in his own voice in ironic mockery. He weeps to think how often a husband rejects his wife's good advice. Whose side is the poet on? It's difficult to say. He is enjoying the contrast between the self-indulgent husband and the waiting, scolding wife. But back to the story. At once we are plunged right into the middle of the scene in the pub, Tam's view of his pleasure, this time not that of his wife. It is sheer euphoria. His boon companion, Suitor Johnny, shares his sense of reckless enjoyment. Tam lured him like a very brother. They had been foo for weeks together. Foo is fool, meaning drunk. The landlady plays a part too, the genius of tavern enjoyment as opposed to domestic duty. The landlord shares all the jokes. The storm outside is forgotten in this warm atmosphere of cosy conviviality. The poet's voice is now wholly at one with the scene being described. absorbed in it, concerned only to present it with enthusiasm. The tone has become positively ecstatic. Kings may be blessed, but time was glorious, or are the hills of life victorious. The picture of the jovial interior is expanded in a blaze of happy sympathy into a celebration of Tam's mood. The double rhymes, happy and nappy, treasure and pleasure, help to give the impression of grand, carefree snap of the fingers, or the final rhyming of glorious with victorious sounds a slightly drunken organ note which, almost parodying the words of God Save the King, swells the climax of this account of Tam's state of mind. There is a long pause now, and when the poet's voice resumes, the tone is altogether changed. The verse moves more slowly. The tone is that of conventional moralising. The language is standard English. But pleasures are like poppies spread. You seize the flower, the bloom is shed. Or like the snow falls on the river, a moment white then melts forever. Or like the Borealis race that flit ere you can point their place. Or like the rainbow's lovely form, vanishing amid the storm. The conventional pretentiousness of the imagery emphasises the pious respectability of the sentiment being uttered. There is almost an element of parody here. Ever since the split in Scottish culture resulting from a great number of factors, culminating the Union of 1707, standard English tended to be used in edifying and genteel communication, and Scots in ordinary daily speech. The language of these moralising lines shows Burns playing with a certain amount of irony, the role of the moralising observer. Scots returns when reality breaks into the cosiness of Tam's state of mind. Nay man can tether time or tide. The hour approaches, Tam mon ride. The tone of the pious moralising is replaced with the suggestion of popular proverbs. And then the contrast between the stormy exterior and the cosy interior is emphasised. That hour, when night's black arch the keystone, that dreary hour Tam mounts his beast in, and sick a night he tacks the road in, as ne'er poor sinner was abroad in. The verse speeds up, echoing the speed of the wind, slowing down only to let the thunder sound loud, deep and lang, and with the thunder the devil is introduced. That night a child might understand the deal had business on his hand. Now comes a shift in tone as we turn to Tam wheel-mounted on his grey mare Meg. He displays a drunken indifference to the weather. Tam scalpeth on through dub and mire, despising wind and rain and fire. Dub and mire is mud and muck. Clutching on to his bonnet, humming an old Scots song, yet somewhat apprehensively looking around for ghosts, Tam approaches Kirkalloway on his horse, and the horrors pile up. All the misadventures and crimes associated with this desolate patch of countryside rise up in his and the poet's memory. But Tam is still gloriously drunk, and even the sight of the kirk in a bleeze, and the sound of mirth and dancing coming from it, do not daunt him. It's the drink that does it. Inspiring bold John Barleycorn, what dangers thou canst make us scorn. We tippany, we fear no evil, we usquebae will face the devil. Tippany was beer and usquebae was the Gaelic for whisky, the water of life. And it is indeed the devil that Tam faces, presiding over a dance of witches. Inspired by drink, Tam is pressed forward in spite of the reluctance of his mare Maggie, and wow, Tam saw an uncouth sight. This sharp, sudden, exclamatory line is very different in movement from the earlier exclamation about the effects of drink. Here he is not halting the narrative to make a generalisation, but pressing forward into his tale in a mood of sudden excitement and astonishment. There follows immediately the eerie catalogue of what Tam saw. Here the note of superstitious terror is exaggerated almost to the point of absurdity, and certainly to the point where some sort of humorous effect is achieved. Here is the devil of folklore, Old Nick, surrounded by all his traditional properties. The objects described are so monstrously horrible that they are not quite real, like the setting of an 18th century Gothic novel. And so a note of comic mockery emerges, as though Burns is gently laughing at people who believe in such things. Yet this does not lessen the suspense. Tam all this while has remained motionless on his mare, watching the incredible scene. And the longer the description, the more interested we become in finding out how Tam has reacted. But Burns deftly increases our suspense with another exclamation, one of a series planted effectively at intervals throughout the poem. Now, Tam, oh Tam, had they been queens, ah, plump and strappin' in their teens, their sarks instead of creashy flannin' been snow-white 1700 linen, their breeks o' mine my only pair, that once were plush, a good blue hair, I would hae gien them aff my hurdies for a blink o' the bonny birdies. But withered bedlams auld and droll, rig-woody hags would spin a foal, loupin' and flingin' on a crummock, I wonder didna turn thy stomach. Too many Scottish words there for me to explain to you, but basically he's looking at old hags dressed very poorly and not attractive at all, and he's actually questioning how they didn't make Tam sick while he was watching them. We return to Tam, whose discerning eyes picked out one of the witches as a winsome wench and wally. The Burns makes clear in a parenthetical description of her that once she grew to her full witch status, she would do serious damage in the countryside. For a moment, however, the picture of Nanny, dancing, is human and strangely touching. Her cutty sark of paisley harn that, while a lassie, she had worn. In longitude, though sorely scanty, it was short, that's what he's saying, it was her best, and she was vaunty. Ah, little ken thy reverend granny, that sark she coffed for her wee nanny. We twa spun Scots, 'twas our riches, whatever graced the dance of witches. The suggestion of a fall from an earlier happy human state gives a momentary flash of pathos to the narrative, but it is modified by humour, and not sustained long enough to threaten the mood of the poem as a whole. The next verse paragraph describes Nanny's furious dancing, the verse getting faster and faster, carrying the reader along with a rush until he becomes identified with Tam as he shouts applause. And with that shout, the scene changes abruptly. Till first a caper sign another, Tam tint his reason a'thegither and roars out, "Weel done, cutty sark!" And in an instant all was dark. And scarcely had he Maggie rallied when out the hellish legion sallied. It's interesting that the change is described without taking a new paragraph. To begin a new paragraph after Tam's shout would be to suggest a pause between the shout and resulting change, whereas the effect of sudden alteration is desired. So Burns describes the beginning of the witch's attack without taking breath, and only after he's got the attack going does he pause. The next paragraph continues and elaborates the description of the pursuing witches and the fleeing Maggie. As bees buzz out with angry fyke, when plundering herds assail their bike, so Maggie runs, the witches follow, with mony an eldritch screech and hollow. He's likening the pursuing witches to a swarm of bees chasing someone. At this moment of suspense, Burns deliberately tantalises the reader again by holding up the narrative while he wags his finger and shakes his head at Tam. The poet's mock sympathetic confidence in his hero's doom has comic implications which are reinforced by the imagery. Ah, Tam, they'll get thy fairn, in hell they'll roast thee like a heron. In other words, they're going to roast him like a fish. Maggie pushes on. The verse, after that sudden slowing down, gains speed again until Tam and his mare gain the bridge and safety, for witches cannot cross running water. But Nanny, pressing close behind, had removed poor Maggie's tail. For Nanny, far before the rest, hard upon noble Maggie's breast, and flew at Tam with furious ettle. But little wished she Maggie's mettle. A spring brought off her master hale, but left behind her ain grey tail. The carlin caught her by the rump and left poor Maggie scarce a stump. Tam makes it across the bridge on his horse, but Nanny, the youngest of the witches who's at the front of the pursuit, pulls off her tail. But this is not the end of the poem. In a slowed-down final movement, a coda as it were, Burns points the moral. Don't be seduced by drink or cutty sarks. It is, of course, a mock moral, a deliberate anticlimax to the verse and variety of the narrative. Was this all that Burns had been telling us? Of course not. The relish of the telling far exceeds the bounds of a moral tale. The narrative presents a picture of human frailty and of the folk imagination that is both attractive and ridiculous. The colour and energy of the account is Bruegelesque in its relish of the humanity caught in the act, as W.E. Henley described Burns' The Jolly Beggars. The placing of the simplistic moral at the end of this vivid story told with such gusto and virtuosity is a comment on a man's tendency to extract simplistic morals from the complexities of daily life. The life of the poem resides not in what it teaches, but in what it presents. A skilful interpretation of a piece of folklore in the light of the poet's own delight in human enjoyment, human frailty, and the workings of the human imagination. This was written by David Deitches in Edinburgh in 1990. David Deitches died in 2005. Tam O'Shanter, A Tale. When Chapman Billies leave the street and Druthie Neighbours neighbours meet, as market days are wearing late and folk begin to tack the gate, while we sit boozing at the nappy and getting foo and unco happy, we think now on the long Scots miles the mosses, water slaps and stiles that lie between us and our hame, where sits our sulky, sullen dame, gathering her brows like a gathering storm, nursing her wrath to keep it warm. This truth fand honest Tam O'Shanter, as he frae air a night did canter. Auld Ayr, when ne'er a town surpasses for honest men and bonny lasses. O Tam, hadst thou but been sae wise as teen thy ain wife Kate's advice, she told thee well there was a skellum, a blethering, blustering, drunken blellum, that frae November till October, a market day, thou was nae sober, that ilka melder wi' the miller thou sat as lang as thou had siller, and every nag was cad a shoe on, the smith and thee gart roaring foo on, that at the Lord's house even on Sunday thou drank wi' Captain Jean till Monday. She prophesied that later soon thou would be found deep drowned in doon, or catched by warlocks in the mirk, by Alloway's old haunted kirk. Ah, gentle dames that gars me greet, to think how mony counsels sweet, how mony lengthened sage advices the husband frae the wife despises. But to our tale, a market night. Tam had got planted unco right, fast by an ingle, bleezing finely, with reaming swats that drank divinely. At his elbow, suitor Johnny, his ancient, trusty, Druthie crony. Tam lewd him like a very brither, they had been foo for weeks thegither. The night drave on wi' sangs and clatter, and aye the ale was growing better. The landlady and Tam grew gracious, wi' secret favour sweet and precious. The suitor told his queerest stories, the landlord's laugh was ready chorus. The storm without might rear and rustle, Tam didna mind the storm a whistle. Care, mad to see a man sae happy, e'en drowned himself among the nappy. As bees flee hame with lades of treasure, the minutes winged their way with pleasure. Kings may be blessed, but Tam was glorious, or are the hills o' life victorious. But pleasures are like poppies spread. You sees the flower, its bloom is shed, or like the snow falls in the river, a moment white, then melts forever. Or like the Borealis race that flit, or you can point their place, or like the rainbow's lovely form evanishing amid the storm. Nay man can tether time or tide, the hour approaches, Tam on ride. That hour o' night's black arch, the key stain, that dreary hour Tam mounts his beast in, and sick a night he tacks the road in, as ne'er poor sinner was abroad in. The wind blew as 'twould blawn its last, the rattling showers rose on the blast, the speedy gleams the darkness swallowed, loud, deep and lang the thunder bellowed. That night a child might understand, the deal had business on his hand. Wheel mounted on his grey mare Meg, a better never lifted leg, Tam scalped on through dub and mire, despising wind and rain and fire, while holding fast his good blue bonnet, while crooning o'er some old Scots sonnet, while glowering round with prudent cares, lest bogles catch him unawares. Kirk Alloway was drawing nigh, where guests and howlet's nightly cry. By this time he was cross the ford, where in the snaw the chapman smored, and past the birks and meikle stane, where drunken Charlie Brack's neck been. And through the whins, and by the cairn where hunters found the murdered bairn, and near the thorn aboon the well where Mungo's mither hanged hersel. Before him Doon pours all his floods, the doubling storm roars through the woods, the lightnings flash from pole to pole, near and more near the thunders roll. When, glimmering through the groaning trees, Kirk Alloway seemed in a bleeze. Through Ilka Bore the beams were glancing, and loud resounded mirth and dancing. Inspiring, bold John Barleycorn, what dangers thou can make us scorn. We Tippany, we fear nae evil, we Usco Bay will face the devil. The swat say reamed and Tammy's noddle, fair play, he card nae deals a boddle. But Maggie stood recht sair astonished, till by the heel and hand admonished, she ventured forward in the light, and wow, Tam saw an unco sight. Warlocks and witches in a dance, nae cotillion Brent knew frae France, but hornpipes, jigs, strathspeys and reels put life and mettle in their heels. A Winnick bunker in the east, there sat old Nick in shape o' beast, a towsy tyke, black, grim and large. To gie them music was his charge. He screwed the pipes and gart them skirl till roof and rafters added dull. Coffins stood round, like open presses, that shod the dead in the last dresses, and by some devilish cantrip slight, each in its cauld hand held a light, by which heroic Tam was able to note upon the haly table a murderer's banes and gibbet airns, twa span lang wee unchristened bairns, a thief, new cutted fairy a rape, wi' his last gasp his gabbed and gape. Five tomahawks wi' blood, red rusted, five scimitars wi' murder crusted, a garter which a babe had strangled, a knife a father's throat had mangled, whom his ain son o' life bereft, the grey hairs yet stack to the heft, wi' mair o' horrible and awfu', which even to name would be unlawfu'. As Tammy glowered amazed and curious, the mirth and fun grew fast and furious. The piper loud and louder blew, the dancers quick and quicker flew. They reeled, they set, they crossed, they cleekit, till ilka card and swat and reekit, and coosed her duddies to the wark, and linkit at it in her sark. Now Tam, O Tam, had they been queens, a plump and strappin' in their teens, their sarks instead o' creashy flannin', been snow-white 1700 linen. Their breeks o' mine, my only pair, that once were plush, O good blue hair, I would hae gien them aff my hardies, for a blink o' the bonny birdies. But withered bedlams old and draw-rig woody hags would spin a foal, loupin' and flingin' on a crummock, I wonder didna turn thy stomach. But Tam kent it was foo brawly, there was a winsome wench and Wally, that night enlisted in the corps, lang after kend on Carrick shore, for mony a beast to dead she shot, and perished mony a bonny boat, and shook baith meikle corn and bear, and kept the countryside in fear. Her cutty sark, o paisley harn, that while a lassie she had worn, in longitude though sorely scanty, it was her best when she was vaunty. Ah, little kent thy reverend granny, that sark she coffed for her wee nanny. We twa pun Scots, 'twas our riches, would ever graced a dance o' witches. But here my muse, her wingman cower, sick flights as far beyond her power, to sing how nanny lap and flang, a supple jade she was and strang, and how Tam stood like ane bewitched, and thought his very een enriched, even Satan glowered and fidged foo fain, and hotched and blew wi' might and main. Till first he caper sign another, Tam tint his reason a' thegither, and rose out, "Weel done, cutty sark!" And in an instant all was dark. And scarcely had he Maggie rallied, when out the hellish legions sallied. As bees biz out wi' angry fyke, when plundering herds assail their bike, as open pussy's mortal foes, when pop she starts before their nose, as eager runs the market crowd, when "Catch the thief!" resounds aloud. So Maggie runs, the witches follow, wi' mony an eldrick screech and hollow. Ah, Tam, ah, Tam, thou'll get thy fairn, and hell they'll roast thee like a heron. In vain thy Kate awaits thy coming, Kate soon will be a woeful woman. Now, do thy speedy utmost, Meg, and win the keystane of the brig. There at them thou thy tail may toss, a running stream they darena cross. But ere the keystane she could make, the faint a tail she had to shake. For Nanny, far before the rest, hard upon noble Maggie pressed, and flew at Tam with furious ettle, but little wist she Maggie's mettle. A spring brought off her master Hale, but left behind her ain grey tail. The carlin clawed her by the rump, and left poor Maggie scarce a stump. Now, while this tale of truth shall read, ilk man and mother's son take heed. Whene'er to drink you are inclined, or cutty sarks run in your mind, think ye may buy the joys o'er dear. Remember, Tam O'Shanter's mare.